We do have a very important question, though. So, speaking of Tradiciones Custodes, and right. Pope Francis' seemingly contempt for the traditional Latin Mass, I'm sure many of you know this, but some of you may not, that the former Ecclesia Dei communities, as they're called, former because Ecclesia Dei doesn't exist anymore, and they all fall under a different dicastery in Rome, but the leadership from the Fraternity of St. Peter, from the Institute of Christ the King, and from about a half dozen or maybe even a dozen other traditionalist orders around the world all met up in France, in Europe, and they jointly issued a communique. And in the communique, they quoted parts of Vatican II. They quoted Amoris Laetitiae, which is the famous document about which there's still an outstanding dubia of five questions, including a signatory who was at the time recovering from COVID, 1984, Cardinal Burke. Now, some of these men, not the signatories, but the members of the communities, were ordained by Cardinal Burke. It's been how many days, guys? 500 days, 1,000 days, 2,000 days since the dubia was issued, and not a word, not a peep from the Vatican. No answer. So the question is, this groveling tone that was struck on this letter, some people have very, very strong opinions about it. I'm interested to hear the opinions of the three of you, and perhaps even from the live audience.
And yourself.
But the question, though, I think I'll kick the question over to Steve, because I think you're going to lay the best groundwork to keep this discussion from getting out of hand. The question is, do we, as lay people, although Brother Martin's a cleric, but do we as Americans sitting on YouTube in the comfort of our homes, in our armchairs, do we have a right to quarterback this letter and critique it and pick it apart and be disappointed by it? Or should we be rightly, righteously indignant about the fact that they are quoting Amoris Laetitiae, which is a slap in the face to Cardinal Burke?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy. Here's a good example. Used to go to football games all the time, listen to them. After the game, we turn on the radio on the way home. And the call-ins, especially after a loss, people would complain about, oh, the coach did this. What were they doing at this third down? Why didn't he pass instead of running? And one of the former players would be on there and asking, all right, what was the position of the cornerback? What was the position of the D-back? What was going on at this time? What was the wide receiver doing? What was the X route doing? What was this? And they had no clue how to answer any of that. But they knew exactly what they should have done. Monday morning comes around. What do you see on sports talk shows? All the call-ins, they know how to coach better than the coaches that are in there. Every team, you pick your team, throw a dart. Monday morning, everybody calls in. It's the greatest football player ever. Greatest high school player, just never made it to the pros. Greatest coach ever. We look down on them going, hey, they should have done that. You should have done that. None of us were at that. None of us was over there in France. No one was in Rome. No one was with these guys. I know one friend of mine who knows these guys personally, and he said the meetings went well. The letter, they quoted Amoris Laetitiae, probably in the context of, hey, Holy Father, this is what you said. I don't think they're all saying, you know what? I love Amoris Laetitiae. Guys that condemn them to the fourth realm of hell, who do you want? Want them to nuke themselves? I ain't seen anybody out there planning on nuking themselves. You going up to your boss tomorrow and saying, I ain't taking a jab, you can fire me tomorrow. Basically, the same thing. I don't see anybody putting a YouTube channel, a YouTube video together saying, you should go out there and take the jab and saying the same words, not tiptoeing around it. To get nuked off the platform. Ain't nobody doing that. But we want other guys to go do that. And for what pride? What good? We're supposed to be cunning. We're supposed to be slick. We're supposed to be sly. These guys know that the Holy Father is not going to live to 198 years old. Survive, live another day. You get everyone, if someone calls this weak, write a better letter. Send it to Rome. If there's a cleric out there that thinks, oh, this was weak, you write a letter, send it to Rome, call me and see what happens. If you get kicked off, then what do? You go back and put around, get a medal or something? Hey, we'll send you a rundown cookie. It's too many armchair quarterbacks out there. Chill out. Pray harder. We don't know what happened. We don't know the context. We didn't write the letter. These guys aren't morons. They're trying to know what they're doing. Let's trust that these guys are trying to do the best, what's good for everyone out there, and not try to self-destruct themselves because we think it's the best idea out there to do, which we don't. It's the stupidest idea.
Question.
So respond to that, Brother Martin, because I would say if I were playing the devil's advocate of what Steve said, I would say, well, ordained men are given a certain grace to their state in life, and they're supposed to be leaders. You wear the cassock as a reminder of death. Yeah. And if you start quoting Vatican II and saying the Vatican, you know, and asking for dialogue and quoting Amoris Laetitiae, if you take a groveling tone to a tyrant, I don't know that that's the right strategy. Nor is it going to be an effective way to galvanize the people that you're charged to lead. So that, again, that's what the devil's advocate would say. I don't know what you're going to say, but respond to what Steve said. It looks like we lost Brother Martin in the pivotal moment. This must be.
Well, until we get him back, I don't see a groveling. Is the dubia groveling?
The dubia is different from this, though. I mean,
but it's not. We're begging for.
Is brother back? Actually, have brother go before us. I just went into a big rant, so if brother's back, let him go before I go.
But. Yeah, I'm using the bathroom when you go, Ryan. No, I'm just kidding. But I don't know if you know if you heard the last part of Steve's question, Brother Martin, or my question. But my question was if you could respond to Steve with respect to the fact that, you know, ordination grants a certain grace to your state in life. Uh-huh. And that there's an expectation of firm leadership, and that you have to set the example for the people that you're charged to lead, et cetera. Right. So whether or not, Steve is saying, we don't have the facts, we don't have the information. I think that's a very valid point. These guys aren't stupid. No, of course they're not. Who are we to second guess it? Well, I think we're not nobody. What do you think?
So three things I want to address. One, first, Steve, the rundown cookie. Which one of y'all's wives is baking the cookies? Because I don't have a wife, so it's got to be one of your guys' wives to hand out the rundown cookie. It's
got to be Ryan's, because mine isn't a baker.
My daughter. Loves bacon.
The rundown cookie. Okay, sorry. I was, Mike, when you were talking, the whole time I was holding back my laughter.
Well, you get the Food Network they can make like us on the cookie. I mean, I'm sure somebody can pull it off.
You know what? If people want to send cookies to the rundown, I might be willing to publish my address. I might be you would be surprised how far RTF Mike would go for a cookie. No, but really, Brother Mark, I don't know what you're going to say. And I don't know if you're going to disagree with Steve or how strongly. And then we're going to turn it over to Ryan, and then we'll keep going around until everyone's exhausted from this. But this really is the top story of the week. The people that we thought were going to defend us seemingly, in one point of view, in one interpretation of the words on the page, with no special knowledge about what happened behind the scenes, seemingly we were betrayed, Brother Martin.
So two things. One is precisely the communique and the strategy they used. Let's address that first. I didn't expect really anything different in the sense that it's not uncommon for those that are priests, that are bishops, to try to use the words of the Pope or the words of ecclesiastical documents to defend their positions, regardless of how heretical they are. or what, how they think heretical they are, is just the modus operandi of those who hold ecclesiastical status. So you try to use people's words against them. As the common saying goes, giving you a taste of your own medicine. However, we know how useless this is, because the author of those words are those who hold the interpretation, the authentic interpretation. So if Pope Francis is writing words, he's meaning those words to be interpreted in a particular sense. And if you're giving them back to him, the different sense, he's not going to be convinced by them, because he holds the authentic interpretation of them. And so really the communique, in quoting Amoris Laetitiae, in quoting Vatican II, was utterly useless. It was like, it's like shooting arrows at a bulletproof vest. They just bounce off, and that's the end of the story. There's nothing that happens there. However, this letter wasn't addressed necessarily to the Vatican. It was addressed to the bishops in France. And yesterday we just saw, or today, we just saw that the Archbishop of Paris, out of 15 Latin masses, deleted 10 of them and kept only 5. So there you go. You see the consequences of the communique, how ineffective their strategy is. And ultimately, if you want to take their small target of France and use it to see what will happen to if they were to address that communique to Rome, you will see how ineffective that strategy is. And so I completely disagree with the strategy of those superiors that met to address the communique in France. Sure, it may have shown their goodwill, but they don't understand that they're dealing with ideologues, and the ideologues don't care about goodwill. They don't care about canon law. For instance, one community I belong to, me and another priest were oppressed, in a sense pushed out, because we liked the TLM, the traditional Latin Mass. And this was while Summorum Pontificum was law. It was law. Law. Can I say law again louder? Law. I'm going to do this close-up thing again until I drive my point.
We need a slow motion capture.
Because this is the constant thing that I find that laity and other people don't understand. Because laity constantly push it. Well, Brother Martin, it's a law. And I'm just like, law? The Vatican, they don't care about law. They care about their ideology. And they'll push their ideology and cite law because they know you care about law. Not because they care about law. They know you care about law. They know your frame of mind. They know the way you think. But they don't care about a double standard. For instance, we see this Joe Biden and his government. I mean, they're more in your face about it than the Vatican is, but they don't really care about understand double standards. They don't care about being called out as hypocrites, because in the sense, if they're called out as hypocrites, if anybody proves, you know, Pope Francis covered up a sexual abuse crisis, who's going to kick him out? Nobody. And so they just, you know, it's water off their back, nothing else. And that's what we're dealing with. And that's what our frustration is. But laity who keep saying law, 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 law. Listen, we're dealing with a regime that doesn't care about law.
Yeah, I just had to jump in. I want to read you a text message I got from a priest today, actually. It says, quote, "I love how bishops, theologians, and priests have for years ignored Humana Vitae and never treated his teachings with respect or infallibility by ordinary magisterium. All now act as if the decree Dignitatis Personae of the CDF is absolutely infallible and gospel." What a crock of you-know-what. So they're selective. You're right. This is a good point. They're selective about what is law and what is just, it's just Humana Vitae. This is the 60s. You know, you can forget about that. But there's other things in the 60s that we really do care about. Sorry, go ahead.
Another thing about grace of office, for instance, if someone is ordained irregularly, like a schismatic or whatever, from a schismatic bishop, they're still ordained. It's still a valid sacrament. So does one still argue that they have the grace of office to still proclaim the truth? And so that's another question I would ask for those who say, you know, we should just listen to the priest because they have grace of office, et cetera, et cetera. Well, as we know, like Father Thomas Rees, SJ, just published that he denies everything that Aristotle teaches about metaphysics, for instance. He just you know, wrote this in an article. Do we accept that he still has grace of office while someone from the SSPX, or the Old Roman Catholic, who sticks firmly to the traditional teachings of the Catholic faith, and will teach that to their parishioners and to teach or proclaim that from the internet, do we say that they don't have the grace of office? I mean, are we going to be so strict on these measures to the point that we have to acquiesce to those who contradict the Catholic faith and appear aggressive against those who are in the situation that they're in simply because they wanted to find a way to live the traditional Catholic faith? It doesn't make sense to me. We cannot be rigid. We cannot be rigid in mere human ecclesiastical law in these extreme, extraordinary circumstances. But we have to know the traditional Catholic faith. We have to know the traditional catechisms to discern who to listen to, who not to listen to. Unfortunately, that's our the ball is in our court. But yeah, that's what I have to say about the grace of office. And
okay, so bottom line, Brother Martin, you are extrapolating from the microcosm of France that the letter was ineffective, and that proves the point that weakness in the face of an ideological enemy is not the right strategy. Is that kind of your point?
Exactly. No, in one sense, they were speaking to the bishops of France, and the bishops of France are weak. How do we know this? Statistics have come out that there are more ordinations for traditional communities in France than there are for dioceses. That pure and simple, that proves that the bishops in France are weak. They're anti-tradition, and they're not going to ordain diocesan seminarians that like the traditional Latin Mass. They have to go to the Institute of the Good Pastor, the Institute of Christ the King, the Fraternity of St. Peter, the Dominicans, St. Vincent Ferrer, et cetera, et cetera. They're receiving more, the majority of the ordinations, the SSPX even, than the diocese in France. And so we know that France is lost. In the diocese of France is lost. We know that. So it's not unbelievable to see the reaction of the Archbishop of Paris deleting 10 out of 15 traditional Latin masses in his archdiocese.
I would almost take that point of view, though, that given the fact that there's per capita, let's say, there's the highest concentration of tradition in France of anywhere in the world. We think we have it good here in the United States, and in many ways we do. But per capita, there are more trads in France. They have us beat hands down. I would interpret that data as maybe an outlier then. The fact that the bishops in France are panicking and trying to suppress the Mass in a more overt way, and that this communique became necessary in this entire situation, I would almost throw it out and maybe not include as a data point from which we can inductively reason what might happen around the world if this particular situation happens with Rome. Ryan, I'm not asking you to respond to that necessarily, but just the overall situation.
I guess I chart somewhere of a middle road between Steve and Brother, in as much as, on the one hand, I see what the fraternity and the institute and the Institut de Bon Pastor and whatever else you're gonna, whatever other group is a party to the letter, I see what they're trying to do. I've done that before when you're arguing with somebody who's very progressive, liberal. They don't care that this was decreed at Trent, even though that should settle the matter. They don't care this was decreed in this council or whatever, this is taught in this way. So you've just, all right, well, here it is in Vatican II, which teaches the same thing that the whole tradition taught on that point. Oh, okay. And then it's a point they can't ignore, basically. Or likewise, conversely, if you're arguing with a set of acantists, it would be absolutely worthless to quote to him anything Vatican II and after, because he's not going to accept it as valid or useful. So you're going to go and quote, you know, all your pre-Vatican II stuff, because that's the only thing they're going to pay attention to by necessity, by logical necessity of their position. So the same thing, I guess, it's the same tack the fraternity and the Institute, et cetera, are trying to take here. And it seems to me, in as much as, which I get it, I understand where they're going, but the problem is it doesn't matter. Look at the source who you're talking to. And so, and I think the whole, it really, my view of the document itself is summed up by about midway through the document, actually, yeah, about midway through, close to the end, as it is found on Raticelli. There's a line where it's emphasized the scriptural passage, have patience with me, from Matthew 18:29. So I said, all right, well, I'm pretty sure this doesn't sound very good. So the quote from the document itself says, Pope Francis encourages the church's pastors to listen to them with sensitivity and serenity, with a sincere desire to understand their plight and their point of view, and to recognize their proper place in the church, etc., from Amoris Laetitia 3:12. And so then the document adds, we are eager to entrust the tragedies we are living to a father's heart. We need listening and goodwill, not condemnation, without prior dialogue. The harsh judgment creates a feeling of injustice, etc. And then it continues, and then it closes with that line from Matthew 18:29, have patience with me. So let's open up to Matthew 18:29. What happens there? And it's, of course, the parable of the unjust steward. And it says, in falling on his face, he begged him, that is the steward, this person that owed the steward money, begged him, saying, have patience with me, and I will repay all things to you. But and then verse 30, which they neglect to quote in the document, but he refused. Rather, he went away and threw him into prison until he would pay the last penny. So I think of that in this kind of quote of have patience with me. What they're actually going to get is what follows in the next verse, is that he'll drag them and throw them into prison, hence jailers of the tradition, right? But, it's kind of like this using of quotes out of context. If you follow the context of the scripture, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody around the Holy Father wouldn't say, well, hey, have patience with me. What happens next? He doesn't, so we shouldn't either. You know, and I don't know, but I think it's more of a prophecy of what will happen by saying, hey, have patience with me. They're going to be thrown into prison. And until, you know, the just, you know, the master will hear about it and fix the injustice at some point, whenever. And that's the reality, that this is a plea that's going to fall on deaf ears. Better, in my opinion, frankly, to declare the beauty of the tradition, the glory of the tradition, the binding nature of the tradition, citing, you know, the councils like Vatican I, which I quoted earlier, and other things. I think that would, like so many things, instead of trying this tack, which works with facile minds, but the Holy Father's not stupid, whatever else we might say about him. And, you know, he's very clever, and he knows very much what he's about. And as we've said before, about canceling, ratioing, whatever it is, the tradition. So an appeal like this, again, I agree with Brother Martin, it's going to fall on deaf ears. They might have intended well. Hey, let's throw his words back at him. You know, it's a sensible strategy, but it's not going to work because he doesn't care. His words only matter in the way he means them, not the way you mean them. Right. And it's going to end up, the whole endeavor will end up just like the steward says, you know, the guy who owed the steward money. Hey, have patience with me. No. We're going to throw you in jail.
Right.
Hence, you have the custodes traditionis to guard the prison where you're in.
Yeah. I had thought about taking a really strong position on this, and I really am just not going to do that right now. But what I will say is that I'm just going to repeat something that I've said on prior rundowns that everyone here has agreed with. This is a time of clarification. This is a time in which we really, although the masks are coming back on, apparently, in a way, the masks are coming off. And you're starting to see who's who. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. When a structure is stressed, you really start to know the integrity of the structure and the components of the structure. And it's called trial by fire, and people are lining up on whatever side they're going to line up on. You're either pro COVID or the COVID religion and the jab and the lockdowns, or you're not. You either supposedly trust the science, etc., or you trust the real science. You either live in the fantasy land that the communists have set up, where they inundate you with false information, or you live in objective reality. And there's only two alternatives. It's either truth or error. And so I do think that this will be a time where every single individual father figure, be he an ordained priest who is a spiritual father, or the father of his family, is going to have to make tough decisions. And what I would recommend that everyone do is pray for the grace to make the right decision. But I do think that a lot of people are going to wake up to the reality of the situation, but a lot more people won't. A lot of people will choose willingly not to wake up. A lot of people will cling to comfort instead of truth. That's always been the case. We saw it. If COVID taught us nothing, it taught us that the sheep will be sheep. It taught us that they will obey their masters. And you know what? From my point of view, I'm only responsible for my family, and that's okay. If the people across the street from me, yes, I pray for them. Yes, I want them to do better. But if they want to cling to comfort, modernity, modernism itself, and the Novus Ordo when the going gets tough, then that's their choice to make. And at the end of the day, what all I can say is that for me and my family, we will cling to antiquity no matter what. Let's get to the grifter segment.
Can a personal planner really make you a saint? The truth is, many of us spend our lives running from distraction to distraction. And even for dedicated Catholics, our quest for sainthood often takes a back seat. The SaintMaker is the first high-performance planner for the spiritual life made by faithful Catholics for faithful Catholics. Combining the practices of Catholic faithful throughout time with the science of personal productivity, the SaintMaker will help you grow in virtue and structure your spiritual life while getting organized and achieving ambitious goals. And that can help you become a saint. The SaintMaker is a beautiful, easy to carry, and well-crafted companion to your missal, Bible, and rosary. Published 4 times per year, each season includes daily planning pages, feast days, and devotions for both forms of the liturgical calendar, goal-setting pages, confession journals, and much more. There are lots of great Catholics using the SaintMaker, like Scott Williams, CEO of Sock Religious, best-selling author Sam Guzman, YouTubers like Dina Barca and Amber Schneider, and priests like Father Dean Marshall and Father Corey Stika. Try the SaintMaker out, and if you decide that it's not for you, you can send it back for a full refund within 90 days. Visit thesaintmaker.com to shop the planners. Quantities are limited, so head over to thesaintmaker.com to order yours and start your SaintMaker journey today.